Hey guys, thanks for checking out Friday's edition of the Sean vs. Wild podcast. I'm back with part two, conversation with Josh Handy and writer-director Bolan Miller about their upcoming project called Iron Lung. You'll hear all about that. He's going to give you the insight, going to give you the inside deets on the story itself, who's attached to the project, where they're going to be filming it, all that good sort of thing. And I'm also going to be keeping you posted throughout the weeks as shooting starts on the show. But yeah, this is part two, and you're going to hear all about Iron Lung today. I want to give a big shout out to everybody that tuned in for part one. Shout out to everybody that's been tuning in week after week. I really appreciate it. It means the world to me. If you guys can, please like, share, and subscribe across social media. The big one is please subscribe on iTunes. Please leave a 5-star review. All those reviews increase visibility for the show, which means more people can stumble upon it. It's the difference between being on the first page of iTunes when it comes to recommended podcasts and being on, you know, the 38th page. So I appreciate all that you guys do. Big thanks to Joe Brock for booping the dials. 2 podcasts this week, and we got to turn around and do another one for Halloween next week. So he's a busy man, and thank you so much, guys. And thanks for tuning in. That's going to be it for me for Friday. And this is my conversation with Josh Handy and Bolan Miller talking about their movie, Iron Lung. Guys, you're not going to want to miss this one. It's time to get wild.
What a delicious lunch we just had there at that small Owenton burger shop.
It was fantastic.
Yeah, I was waiting for you. I was waiting for you to come in on that. You know what? Fantastic. You're still hungover from all the burger.
I was just literally sitting here thinking about this burger, and if I had room, I would have ate another.
What is the name of this place? Let's give a shout out.
Shout out to Family Billiards in downtown Owenton, Kentucky.
It was mind-blowing to me because not only was there, small-town flair and good home-cooked food, but there was a whole pool hall in the background, in the back of the place, and you could smoke in there.
I know. They were actually sitting there smoking while they were eating. Like, I was watching them do that. It was interesting.
Yeah, I saw that guy come out from the pool area, and I was like, oh, he must just, I mean, they must allow it, but he's probably smoking in the pool area, just coming up to grab a drink or something. But then I did see a lady smoking at her table while her food was there.
Yes.
You're just not going to see that in this day and age.
You don't hardly see it anywhere. That's actually the only place that I have seen it. But I guess that's the good old South for you.
Yeah, man. Well, I was saying, too, like, I remember being a kid and, like, my mom smoking at the mall or, like, the grocery store. And it's like you would never see that ever in this day and age. But, hey, if you're ever in Owenton and you want to get a good game of billiards and delicious lunch, hit it up. And you can smoke in there if you so choose.
If you so choose.
So, yeah. Well, guys, welcome to the Sean vs. Wild podcast, part two of my conversation with Josh Handy. And it's Friday, so hopefully your work week has been going awesome. Special treat here for you. 2 episodes this week. And, yeah, and not only am I hanging out with the handyman himself at Handyland, we're still on location here.
It's beautiful out, too. It looks great.
What a great day. We've had an awesome day so far.
We've had a great day.
And the good times are just going to keep on rolling because now you're joined by your boy Bolan Miller to discuss a very special project. Guys, why don't you tell the listeners what's going on?
It's a very interesting thing that we actually have created here. Bolan, a good friend of mine that I actually met touring many years ago, has written several different scripts, and we're actually going to let him talk to you about it a little bit. But I've come onto this project about a year ago, and since then we've developed this amazing project that we're turning into a full production feature film. And we haven't really went public with saying too much about what it is or what we're trying to do, but we've come a long way with it. And the original projection was to film this in Oregon, and since I've been a part of this, I've been sharing with Bolan some of the benefits of the idea of moving this production to Kentucky, and that's what we're doing. We're moving this production to Kentucky.
Well, guys, I'm not going to keep you in suspense any longer. They're making a movie, guys. It's called Iron Lung, and it I've heard the premise of it. It's going to blow your mind grapes. So I'm very excited to have you on here. I'm a big movie fan myself. Bolin, obviously, you got to be a movie fan.
Absolutely. I'm obsessed with movies, have been since I was about 12 years old.
What's the movie that got you into movies? Do you remember?
Yeah, absolutely. The movie that got me into movies was Evil Dead 2 by Sam Raimi. And I grew up pretty religious, so I wasn't allowed to watch R-rated movies. But I had a friend whose parents didn't care what he watched, and on the weekends, we would crash over at his place, go to the local Great American Video, and literally we rented from A to Z the entire horror section of that place. And when we got to E, Evil Dead 2 is when I started to pay way more attention to movies.
Yeah, I love that movie. And I actually read a lot about that movie. I read a lot about like what Sam Raimi went through to get producers and raise money and raise funds. And the movie itself is entertaining, but the backstory is just as awesome because it's like, you know, he's hitting up family dentistries and all kinds of stuff just to raise a dollar to get his dream off the ground.
He was 19 years old when he made Evil Dead 1, and I think they borrowed a camera from a college and spent 2 months at a cabin. And him and Bruce Campbell, and the rest is history.
Yeah. So now you're writer-director. What give some of the listeners your background, because you've been, you know, you've got an extensive background yourself.
I went to film school in 2008, the Los Angeles Film School, which was a pretty good school. But I guess at any film school you go to, you know, you're going to get out what you put in. And from there, I started writing movies, learned the format, and ended up, you know, just getting videography jobs, freelance from, you know, Skull Candy Headphones and other companies, and did that for a while and put together about 4 scripts and started getting good feedback from them and started developing the one that was horror because the advice we got was for your first run, especially if you're trying to direct, horror has a very forgiving audience and as long as you keep it fresh and show them stuff they haven't seen before, it seems to work.
Fantastic. Well, we'll get into more of the background stuff, but let's just give the listeners the gist of the movie that you guys are putting out here. Let's just lay it out there, so get them intrigued, whet their whistle, if you will, get them excited for the movie. So tell us about the movie. It's called Iron Lung.
It is called Iron Lung, and it's actually... to be best described by Bolin, because every time he describes it, I get more pumped. You know, so he's the one that's had this in his mind for many years leading up to this point. And you know, since I've been involved, it's really been most of just the logistical back end and just helping momentum continue. But the actual story itself is unique, and the people that we have involved are it's pretty exceptional. But yeah, Bolin, if you want to tell
Bolin,
about
what's the backstory, give everybody the deets.
So Iron Lung is he's a serial killer who's been killing people, and the movie basically opens with him in the hospital in a coma. The cops have finally captured this guy, and the entire town's waiting for him to wake up and receive due justice. Unfortunately, that doesn't really happen the way the town plans. He does wake up and he ends up escaping, and well, the rest is the movie.
Gotcha. Well, I'm not going to get no spoilers here, guys.
Yeah.
But still, that sounds awesome. And you guys were telling me that you basically originally it came from like a 10-minute short film, or was it always a fully developed script and then?
Well, okay, it was always a fully developed script, but, you know, being as we're a new production company, haven't directed before, not a feature, people have been asking and or wanted to see what exactly we would produce. So as a proof of concept, we took all of the flashbacks from the script and combined them into a sort of a short on its own, because it does tell its own story within the story. And we ended up filming that. And so that is our proof of concept, but it also stands as its own short.
Well, you got to add that into the DVD extras.
Absolutely.
Most definitely. Yeah, we're doing a lot of the behind-the-scenes filming as well. While we're doing different things, we're just we're including that as well. Bolin had the idea to include a documentary, the making of, because we're finding that there's a lot of producers, writers, directors all in the same position as we are right now, and we're all in the boat of trying to make the film actually happen. Like, you know, putting everything together collectively so it becomes a film that people will go to see and become fans of. Like, there's a lot of people. So Bolin came up with a clever title for the actual documentary itself.
So the documentary, it's kind of, it's not just a documentary on a movie. Right now, the industry is changing so much. I mean, all the networks are now on the internet, and there's not really a mainstream anymore, and a million other things. So people don't know where the revenue is going or even how they're going to fund movies right now. So I think doing a documentary right now for this movie also will give insight into how the industry is changing at this very moment. So a couple of guys who don't know what they're doing, I mean, taking on the task from A to Z, is or will be the basic gist of the documentary, which is titled What to Do When You Don't Know What You're Doing, A Comprehensive Guide to Independent Filmmaking.
Fantastic. Well, hopefully people get a lot of information about it, just learning. You know, everybody's going to make mistakes, but they'll learn from what you guys are doing, what to do, what's successful, what might not be.
Exactly.
Right.
And how to overcome obstacles, because it's not easy to make a movie. It's not easy to take an idea, for one, put it to paper and write it, and then for two, to actually get it made. I mean, what are some of the obstacles that you guys have come across so far just getting it, you know, from paper to fruition?
The biggest thing since I've been involved in anything is the financing of the film. Where's the money going to come from in order to make this film actually work? Putting it to paper and actually figuring all that out, the breakdown of the script itself. There's several people within the industry that are very qualified in helping you doing so. And there's just a whole timeline and order that you have to follow to get to that point. But the biggest obstacle that I would say even most companies face is where the funding comes from. And you can get in front of those people, but actually making it to where it makes sense enough for them to give you the money, knowing that it's a very high risk to begin with, it's such a huge obstacle. And we've done a lot of self-funding. We've had we've been privileged with some people stepping in and helping us out with some investments, and we're set up to talk with some other people here in the near future that are going to help us with the remaining funding that we need. So, but yeah, that's definitely the toughest that we've encountered thus far.
I absolutely agree.
Have you guys thought about crowdfunding or anything like that?
We've definitely looked into crowdfunding, and you know, crowdfunding is great for anything right now. But the main thing that we found doing our research is, if you're going to do a crowdfund, we've looked up any of the successful crowdfunding movies. They have a built-in audience. They either have a previous movie or they've been putting out short videos for 10 years and building an audience.
Sure.
So without that built-in audience, you're kind of just soliciting the same people you'd be soliciting if you were just, you know, writing letters or calling people that you knew.
Right.
So crowdfunding doesn't I don't think it's a viable option for us until we've put something out already or gained an audience.
Right. You got to give them a little something to see that you guys are the real deal, that you guys are legit. I mean, it's difficult out there, because if you want to make something, whether it's a movie or you want to make music or you want to make a podcast, it's kind of difficult, because for every good, you know, all these good intentions, a lot of times there's so many people out there that have just kind of put out some subpar material, and you got to be able to separate yourself from them and be like, hey, look, I know that you might have seen in the past this movie, and this isn't it. You know, this isn't, we're not taking it lightly. We're taking it very seriously. We want to make it the real deal. So yeah, it's difficult because there's so much out there, so much content out there, good, bad, or ugly. And you got to kind of be in competition with them as well.
No, most definitely. It is a very competitive field that we're in, but it honestly comes down to how good your story is. I mean, you can have a great team, but if you don't have something that's unique and different, I mean, even though it could somewhat touch on what past projects have been, you know, having somebody that's qualified enough to create a great script, but creative enough to apply things that might be a little out of question, you know, it gets people talking a little bit. And then that's one thing that Bolin has done in the time that I've been working on this. He's created a really awesome project for us to move forward with here. And I can't wait to honestly just make it work. Like, there's so much that we have to look forward to.
Yeah. Well, Bolin, let me ask you too, because, you know, as writer, director, where did, you know, where did the inspiration come from to make this movie? I mean, what's the story behind it?
I did want to write a horror movie. I kind of thought of the original idea when I was in film school still, and I just really like Michael Myers and Jason Voorhees, and even Candyman. I mean, I just love a really strong, almost unbeatable bad guy in these horror movies, and I started thinking, well, you know, where is Michael Myers, you know, 30 years from now, or where is you know, Jason now, you know what I mean, at age, you know, upper middle age,
right?
And you know, that's, I started kind of coming up with the concept of Iron Lung, this older, super unstoppable guy who kills people, and as he's still going on, so it kind of came from a little bit of that, but also, you know, I wanted to write something where I could approach an actor who maybe isn't getting a lot of work right now because of their age. And that was some advice I got given as well. So I figured Kane Hodder, the guy who plays Jason, might be interested in doing a similar role. I look him up. That's all he's doing is these horror roles. He does a little bit of acting as well. But you know, the idea just came from that, and it just kind of, I just started writing out of that, and you know, trying to keep it as interesting as possible and keep the pace moving and keep the kills original.
Yeah, that's the key. Everybody tunes in for the kills. That's the great thing about a horror movie in general. The story, for me, the best horror movies are the ones with the story, so that's going to keep me glued. But then, if you get the creative kills, that's going to get everybody else involved as well. That's going to get everybody else stoked on it.
Absolutely. And one of the things I'm trying to do with this script is, it's a slasher movie in structure, but if you pay attention to the storyline, there's not one blade weapon used in the movie. There's not a slash or a cut or a chop. The guy really just crushes people and smashes them, so we're kind of referring to it as a smasher.
Oh, nice.
Instead of a slasher.
So look at you, your own genre, guys, trailblazing the game here.
Right. Well, you know, James Cameron, when he came out with the Terminator 1, he tried to make his own genre called tech noir. In fact, the club that Sarah Connor runs into when Terminator's chasing her, Arnold Schwarzenegger's chasing her in there, is called tech noir.
Oh, okay.
And it was kind of a, they thought that was going to spiral into a new genre.
Well, hey, they didn't get that far off. I mean, I'm sure once William Gibson wrote what was his famous Technomancer?
Neuromancer.
Yeah, there you go. I feel like that kind of, especially mid '80s, kind of blazed the trail. I could definitely see Terminator doing that, fitting into that category. And then, really, it might not have taken off, but I mean, The Matrix made a lot of money about 10 years after that, using very similar,
absolutely, yeah,
type of feeling.
There was a tech noir kind of genre, but the name just never caught on, I guess.
Right. Well, now you got the Smasher flick, which I would go to a drive-in to see that.
Boom.
You know what I'm saying? So you had the idea when you're still in film school, and so, how do you approach Kane Hodder about, like, hey, I've got this thing?
So we first approached an actor named John Ennis, and he's from Mr. Show with Bob and David. He's a super funny guy, super talented, can sing, does everything. Once we got him involved, we kind of got a little bit more confidence, and I was like, well, let's ask, you know, who's our top choice? Our top choice is Kane Hodder. So we emailed Kane's manager. Her name's Judy Fox. And, you know, she was a little standoffish with us. We were nobodies. She didn't know who we were. She's trying to see if we were a viable option. And we really didn't get much of a reply until Kane finished reading the script. And he called her and told her that he's going to be Iron Lung and he wants the role. And suddenly she was the nicest person in the world to us.
Hey, that you got, they got to make sure you're legit. They got to make sure you got a quality product.
There. Oh, yeah. She's doing her job.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that's got to be, I mean, Kane Hodder's huge. I mean, still huge and garnering attention through his movies. And then a whole new generation, I feel like, loves Kane Hodder because of his convention circuit, you know?
Absolutely.
He's doing all these horror conventions and stuff. He's putting his FaceTime in. And people love Kane Hodder, so that can only drive the stock of the movie up.
Yeah, he's also the nicest guy. Half the time he spends visiting people in hospitals and burn wards. He was burned pretty bad early in his career, all on his face and his chest and everything. And so he does a lot of good charity stuff too.
Was it during like a Friday the 13th or not? Yeah, like a Friday the 13th.
I think it was one of the early. It might have been a movie before Friday the 13th. I don't want to say. I don't really know.
My goodness, that's crazy. I didn't know that about him. But the fact that he could turn that into like positive charity work and stuff like
that. He was in his early 20s too. It really messed with him, he said, and so you know.
Yeah, but that's cool that you can a guy like that can turn. Something horrible that happens to him into something that could be positive and empowering for other people that might feel the same way.
Anytime I hear anything or read anything online from a fan of his, every word is positive. And he has so many fans, like, collectively that just keep coming back saying how awesome of a person he is. So, I mean, we're fortunate to be working with him. It's going to be great.
So, in the script, you know, you wrote it based around, you know, maybe with the thought of Kane Hodder in your head.
Absolutely.
And based it out of Zigzag, Oregon, you said?
Mm-hmm.
And you're from Oregon?
Yes.
I told you my feelings about Oregon, guys. Just kidding. I met one Oregon person that I absolutely adore, and that would be Bolin Miller.
thank you very much.
Just kidding. I love all of you. Show me your Oregons, all of you. So check it out. So You base it in Zigzag, Oregon, and but things have changed. Things have changed quite a bit here, location-wise. What made you decide to take it to from Oregon to small-town Kentucky?
Well, when I partnered with Josh, I had no idea that Kentucky was offering a 35% film tax incentive.
Hey, that always helps.
Absolutely helps. So that kind of got me interested, and then Josh, you know, we have everything set up for Oregon, but, you know, if there's a cheaper way to do it, you know, in this business, you really got to try to find that route.
Yeah.
So talking to Josh, he starts telling me about his farm he has out there. He's got ATVs and a creek and woods, all the exterior locations that we're looking for, creepy old abandoned hospital, pretty much anything that I was trying to look, find, he already had, so things just started making more and more sense.
Right.
So I flew out here, we just started taking meetings, and
just
so far,
a couple days ago.
Yeah, so far it's going really well. I'm getting more and more sold on Kentucky every day.
Well, I mean, we're here in Handyland right now. We're looking at the location. We're seeing everything that is available, and it's perfect to be put in front of a camera.
Absolutely.
So I don't blame you. You know,
yeah, there's a lot of hype going on with Kentucky right now in the film industry, especially with that tax incentive. They've recently filmed quite a few different things here, haven't they, Bolin?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I know Louisville has gotten quite a few things in the pipeline. I know that, what's your boy's name? Guys, listeners, you're going to kill me for forgetting that guy's name, but what's that guy's name that's in The Social Network? You guys know what I'm talking about.
Oh, Jesse.
Jesse Eisenberg. He's been floating around Louisville doing a movie.
Oh, wow.
Nicolas Cage was floating around Louisville some years ago. They did a movie here.
Very
Tom
cool.
Cruise is doing another movie in Louisville. So Kentucky seems like it has become some. The word's out on Kentucky because it seems like more and more people are coming in here to do movies. So.
Yeah, absolutely. The new Kingsman movie, half of that movie is in Kentucky. There's like a whole new league of statesmen that are from Kentucky that are like the Kingsmen in America.
Oh, well, I'll have to check that out. I love the original.
Oh, it's so good.
That's one of those ones where we were talking earlier off camera, the record. I don't know. Off of my talk boy. Okay. I didn't have the talk boy recording right there. But we were talking about movies that we loved that were just kind of under the radar. And, you know, I was talking about Looper, I was talking about Ex Machina, but Kingsman was absolutely one of those movies. Somebody was like, you got to watch this? And I was like, oh, I'll watch it later. And then about a year ago, flipped it on, and I was like, holy shit.
Sean, I did the exact same thing. It had so much hype, and I don't know why, but when I saw the trailer, I was like, it looks like kind of a James Bond Jr. kind of thing, and just looked not that interesting. I don't know. But my dad actually made me sit down and watch it. And, man, if Sam Jackson doesn't entertain every time in a new way, putting his time in, putting his work in.
Yeah, I mean,
you know, plus Colin Firth. And is that Joel Edgerton's brother or
I'm not
son?
Sure.
I know his last name's Edgerton.
I don't know.
So, all right. Well, I don't know either. But.
One of the Edgertons is in it, guys, and
absolutely.
He kills it.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, love that. Oh, I didn't know that they were doing a whole thing in Kentucky. But is it like a Fort Knox thing or what?
No, somebody blows up their headquarters, and so they find a safe that has some bourbon in it. But the bourbon has like a secret code to lead them to the statesman in Kentucky who then help them get revenge.
Oh, guys.
It's a whole bourbon plot.
Yeah. Well, who needs to even go watch the movie? You filled me in. Filled me in on all the deets. So, yeah. So you're moving the production here to Kentucky. And I think it's going to do a lot for, I was talking about all these movies that are filmed in Louisville, around Louisville, or movies that would get filmed around Lexington, but this will do a lot more for an area of Kentucky that's, you know, a stop on the map between Louisville and Cincinnati, you know?
Yeah, pretty much completely unheard of. I mean, Owington's just your small little country town, and you wouldn't know about it unless, I don't think anybody would really know about it.
Yeah. Well, now they know about it from the podcast because, hey, if you want to go to Owington, grab a great burger and smoke at the same time, nailed it.
Nailed it.
I got a place for you. But, yeah, that's cool that it'll do a lot for, you know, kind of, like I said, just usually maybe a place where someone stops, gets off the exit, gets gas or food or something, and then goes to Cincinnati, you know?
Exactly.
So, yeah. Well, and then so you've got your script, you've got your location. What's next? What's in the pipeline here? Like, when does production start? What other hurdles are you going to have to jump through as this thing progresses here in the next few months?
Well, I think next we're going to meet with the Kentucky Film Commission and figure out exactly what they can do for us and what they're going to do to entice us to bring the entire production here as opposed to Portland.
Right.
And then we'll be meeting with some more people about money, which, again, is the hardest part.
Money is definitely the most difficult part of any project.
But the cool thing is, in Kentucky, before you even have your money locked in, you can apply for the film tax incentive and roll all that through. And basically, you have 2 years to find your funding and 4 years to shoot the movie.
Fantastic. So that gives you it's not like a, I don't know. Of course, sometimes 2 years, 4 years is not a lot of time, but it's not one of those things where it's like, all right, well, we gave it to you. Here's 6 months.
Right. No, they're pretty fair about it, you know, and takes a lot of time and takes a lot of talent to find money for films. If you look at Steven Spielberg, Lincoln, he had Daniel Day-Lewis attached. It took him 5 years to find the funding for that, you know, and that's Spielberg and Daniel Day-Lewis.
Right, exactly. Names that everyone has heard of.
Absolutely.
So. Yeah, so, I mean, yeah, even they have the difficult part of finding the financing to make it work. So, and with us being first-time filmmakers, that is a hurdle, but we're not completely terrified by the fact that I mean, it's going to work, and it has been working. So everything's looking good.
Yeah, plus you got Josh Handy here on your side, and he's one of those guys, if you say, hey, that's impossible, he'll give you five reasons why not only is it not impossible, this is exactly how he's going to do it.
Oh, yeah, and he'll tell you how he did it last week, too.
Yeah. So, yeah. And when does, production start? Do you guys have any kind of set time or dates or anything like that? When you would like to have it go into effect? What's your timeline like from here on out?
Well, we'd like to be shooting as soon as February, if that's possible. And if everything goes the way we're planning, it looks like that's how it's going to go. Fingers and toes crossed. But a couple of more meetings, and we'll know in the next 2 weeks whether or not we'll be shooting in February.
Fantastic.
We were scheduled to go into production a couple other times, but every time we started looking into the bigger picture, we keep adding people that have made the project, has built it out for us even more, you know, and the timeline just keeps adjusting a little bit. But that's worked in our benefit because we've found things that we would like to add that we wouldn't have normally had if we were to have gone into production when we normally scheduled.
The project just, it's continuing to grow, so we definitely want to do it justice and make the best movie we can. We actually just also added Brendan Small, who's the co-creator of Metalocalypse, does all the voice work, does all the guitar work. He's a friend of John Ennis's and definitely into horror, and he signed on to be a co-star as well as work a little bit on the soundtrack, which is a huge bonus.
That's a huge deal. Metalocalypse is gigantic. A lot of listeners out there of the Sean vs. Wild podcast, me included, love that show. So that's a big deal. Are you a metal fan at all? You can say yes.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes.
Yeah, well, so it's right up our alleys.
Absolutely.
Have you ever heard of a band, I know this is off topic, but Voices of Anatole?
No, I haven't, but they sound brutal.
My favorite metal band, I don't know if they're still around, but I hope that they are. Lead singer's name is Roz. He's actually a good friend of mine. We need to bring him back. Voices of Anatole.
Yeah, let's bring him back, and let's bring him back on the podcast. You know what I'm saying? We'll make that happen.
We can make that work.
Yeah. Voices of Anatole, that's pretty brutal. So, yeah. Well, now, and you got him in the works, so you got your soundtrack pretty much worked out here.
Absolutely.
And you got your press, man. You're planting the seed right now on the Sean vs. Wild podcast.
Like I said, it's just growing everywhere we go. People either want to get involved or help us out some way, or we can help them out. And, you know, I think a big key to it is just being open and receptive to people and working with other people and collaborating.
Yeah, well, you were telling me when I first got here, you know, not to bring up any numbers, but, you know, you basically said you started out with the dream, with the script, and, you know, a few $1,000s, and now it's just grown, you know, 10 times the amount, 100 times the amount, whatever the case may be.
Yes. It's absolutely grown way, way bigger than when we started with about a $6,000 budget, and that was all the money we had between me and a couple of partners. And, you know, since that time, it has gotten up to, I believe our budget now is $400,000. And that's still pretty small for a movie, guys.
Right, that's true. But
it's way bigger than we had dreamed about doing a movie for and with.
But that's kind of one thing that's so cool about, you know, it's 2017 now. People are so connected that you can find like-minded people that will help you out with your dream, making your dream a reality. You know what I'm saying? Going from $6,000 to $400,000. And who knows where it'll be, you know, by the time production starts. Or who knows where it's going to be by this time next year, you know, whenever that post-production starts, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
So.
No, we have a good, solid plan going into how we're going to market and distribute the film. We've added a really solid team that's going to help us really take this thing to the next level. We have a really good plan with all of this, and the thing that excites me the most with all this is as soon as this one's done, we already have several other scripts ready to go. One getting ready to go into development. Bolin has shopped his scripts around to a couple different people, and one company in particular, Link Entertainment, has shown interest in one of the scripts. very, very reputable management company, and we're working on putting something into development fairly soon.
Yeah, absolutely. Fingers crossed again. You know, that's I think Ron Perlman's management company, Link Entertainment.
I love Ron Perlman.
Oh, absolutely. Kronos, I love Ron Perlman.
Kronos was my jam. I remember, oddly enough, being sick from school sometimes, and Beauty and the Beast would always be on.
Right. So you know that's George Double R. Martin.
Oh, really?
Writing Beauty and the Beast. He wrote those and produced. He swore off television after that, and then, well.
Well, we see how that worked out for
and
him.
And he came right back, yeah.
Yeah, and his career has just been in the shitter ever since. No, guys, George R. R. Martin, you guys know him from a little show called... am I saying this correctly? Game of Thrones.
Yes, you are.
So, yeah, I can't. I didn't know that he wrote Beauty and the Beast, but that was always the show that would be on. That would be on, like, you know, on regular TV whenever I was sick from school.
Oh,
come
yeah.
on, at like 3 o'clock in the afternoon or something like
Linda
that.
Linda Hamilton and Ron Perlman.
Yes. So, Linda Hamilton. I wonder what she's up to now.
She just got signed on to. I guess James Cameron just got the rights back for Terminator. And he called her immediately and was like, we're making one and you're in it.
Fantastic.
So that's where she's at.
Are you a big fan of, you know, I don't mean to get off topic here, but I feel like I'm a big movie. I'm passionate about movies. I love movies. They're my jam. Movies and music and pro wrestling. But so let's talk about movies because you guys are both knowledgeable. Josh, I take it you're knowledgeable about movies. I haven't really talked movies with you for a while, but me and Bolin have just been tearing it up today.
I mean, I would say I'm a little knowledgeable about movies, but not as much as Bolin. Bolin just, he has all this information about film that I learn from on a day-to-day just because he talks about it so much. But I'm somewhat knowledgeable of films.
Yeah. Well, you guys make the perfect team because he's got all the movie knowledge and you've got all the handy dandy tools that it's making it happen.
Yeah.
So
natural born producer, this guy.
Yeah.
Since I've met him, he is constantly working on 5 projects and taking steps towards his end goal on each one of them every day. It's yeah.
It's one thing to dream it. I mentioned this last podcast, but you got to work every single day. So most people just, I don't feel like they ever get to the end goal because they don't work towards it.
It's hard, man. I mean, bottom line, your mind is your worst enemy when it comes to that. The second that self-doubt even comes to mind, your perseverance and or energy towards anything becomes very minute. It becomes very hard, you know. But self-doubt, if you can overcome that, you can pretty much overcome just about anything.
Man, that's inspirational. Andy, you're always so positive.
I try to throw in a little here and there. Yeah.
Good partner to have, people. Find a positive partner who works hard.
Yeah, someone that'll tell you that you can actually do it instead of telling you reasons why you can't. But yeah, so let's chat a little bit about movies here because, you know, you brought up Terminator. We were talking about Terminator 2 actually before we went to Owenton's Burgers and Billiards. Family Burgers and Billiards?
Family Billiards.
Yeah, we're going to get this right before it's over. Before we went to Family Billiards, shout out to them. They sponsored the podcast today, guys. So I'm on their cup. I don't know if you guys noticed that. We know all the local sponsors are on their drinking glasses. I'm going to get on that glass. But yeah, we're talking about Terminator 2 earlier, being the, in my opinion, the greatest sequel.
Yeah, absolutely. I fully agree.
Are you big into science fiction, or is horror like your main jam? Or
oh no, yeah, science fiction I probably like more than horror, but I really like every genre of movies. I like romance, I like drama, horror, suspense, any genres really.
What are some of your favorite movies?
Let's see.
They don't have to be your top favorite. I'm not holding you to it.
Okay,
but just throw some out there that
absolutely Terminator 2, and then. Let's see, Hunt for the Wilder People. That's a newer one, but it's a really amazing movie. Whale Rider is a really good one. You know, I could give you my favorites, and next week they'll be completely different than this week.
That's what always happens.
But, Muriel's Wedding is one I saw recently. There was a roundtable with Ridley Scott and, you know, Quentin Tarantino, a bunch of big directors at this table. They're all talking about their favorite movies, and they're all saying, you know, really good movies that we've all heard of, and then gets to Ridley, and he's like, Muriel's Wedding. I could watch that movie 100 times.
Yeah.
And I'm just thinking, well, what the hell is this movie? I go and find it and watch it, and well, he was absolutely right. It's a fully amazing movie about nothing you would be interested in, but yeah. It's so good.
Basically, guys, like a social outcast. It's Australian.
Oh, you've seen it then?
Oh, yeah. I have it on Laserdisc.
Oh, awesome. Okay. Very cool. Very cool.
Social outcast. Everyone kind of, makes fun of her, doubts her, and she gets married. So there you go.
There it is.
So it might not sound like it's right up your alley, but trust me, it's a good one. So Muriel's Wedding. Got it on Laserdisc.
Wow.
Are you a fan of Laserdisc?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So that's one of my no, it's not one of my prize Laserdiscs, but I do have Star Wars, the original Star Wars on Laserdisc, which is the only unaltered version available on home video format.
Wow. Okay. So, very cool.
Yeah. We're talking Han shooting Greedo first.
Wow. Okay. So, okay.
That's cool.
I filmed, I'm sure there's a copyright police officer out there ready to bust me at any time, but I was telling people about this Laserdisc. And then randomly, I just put it on that part, and then filmed it on Instagram and put it on my Instagram. Like, look, he actually shot Greedo first. Here's the proof.
Wow. So there you go.
Everybody check out my Instagram, and I'm not trying to brag or anything, but it's there. What do you guys think of, there's an ongoing topic here. What do you guys think about Star Wars? Just because on this podcast, we talk a lot about it. I talk to a lot of people that are really into it, and I have my opinions about it. What do you think about it?
I'm a fan. I don't think I'm a big enough fan to hate Star Wars for, doing something wrong. But I'm a fan. I really enjoy the movies. The storytelling's really good. The idea of a space opera, it's just really cool.
Yeah, I think people like it. I'm on the fence about it. Maybe I'm like you. I really like it. I don't think I like it as much as everyone else, though, likes it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think I'm that fanatical about anything, so maybe it's just a personality thing, but,
Have you ever dressed up in a character Star Wars related?
No, never have.
I haven't either.
I went to a comic book convention one time, and it was awesome, and I wore my Michael Jackson Beat It jacket, and everybody was in full costume, and they came up to me like, dude, I love your jacket. I'm like, hey.
Nice.
No. Hey, I appreciate that. Didn't even have to get fully dressed up. All I had to do was wear a Beat It jacket and black pants and a white shirt. And I was the belle of the comic book convention that day. So everybody's like, hey, man, there's an after party after this. Do you want to come? Like, maybe you can dance? It's like, oh, well, I'll see what I can do. So, yeah. What other movies are you interested in?
Yeah. Well, I don't think I mentioned any science fiction, so let's see.
I was going to say, besides Terminator 2, of course.
I really like Gattaca. And let's see. My mind doesn't.
I was a big fan of Gattaca. We actually watched that in high school a lot.
Oh.
I had a science teacher, and it'd be like, okay, guys, winter break's coming up. We're not going to do anything today. We'll put on Gattaca.
That is sweet. So, you got cool teachers.
Yes. So Gattaca was cool. Equilibrium is another movie that came out around that time.
Christian Bale. Yeah, I like Equilibrium.
Movie. Gattaca, Equilibrium, The Matrix. I feel like they all were like.
The 13th Floor came out around the same time, too. It's very similar to The Matrix, so it didn't get a lot of play. But it's a great movie.
I feel like that's how Gattaca and Equilibrium were. Like, they kind of came out around the same time as The Matrix, so they're almost like the forgotten gems of that era.
What about Lucy?
Oh, I didn't see that yet. The one with Scarlett Johansson.
Yeah.
Heard it was awesome.
It's phenomenal. Have you seen it?
Yeah. I thought it was really good. It's another La Femme Nikita story, but it was done really well.
Yeah.
Speaking of La Femme Nikita, that show used to come on right after pro wrestling whenever I was a kid.
Exactly.
You got to watch Monday Night Raw and then followed by La Femme Nikita or Silk Stockings, depending on what year you tuned in.
What channel was that on?
That's the USA Network.
USA, I was going to say. That was USA, right?
Oh, trust me, the USA Network. Did you ever see, I'll tell you a movie that I, speaking of science fiction, that doesn't come up a lot, but it's one of these under-the-radar movies that I really love. Did you ever check out Dark City?
Dark City is amazing. Absolutely, I love that movie. And that's another one, like you were saying, kind of got overshadowed by The Matrix.
Right. And I just love Dark City. Kiefer Sutherland's great. I mean, it's almost the exact same plot as The Truman Show, mm-hmm. oddly enough. Mm-hmm. but takes place in honestly one of the coolest looking worlds, one of the coolest looking universes. The only way I could describe it to some of you guys out there listening, if you haven't seen Dark City yet, it's kind of like watching BioShock the movie. If you ever played the video game BioShock, very kind of Art Deco.
Yeah, and, absolutely.
Noir.
Well, and then they do the thing where they mix different eras together. They just didn't really care. And so there's like 80s stuff at the same time as 1940s stuff, and the style of dress is very film noir 1940s, but it's just a mix of different eras.
Yeah. What are some of your favorite filmmakers?
Well,
I didn't prep you on that one.
Absolutely.
We're going to catch you off
guard. My favorite filmmakers are, let's see, David Lynch, Alexander Payne, James Cameron.
Definitely James Cameron.
Taika Waititi, I hope I'm saying his name right, is one of my new favorite directors.
What's he been making?
Okay, he did, his original one is called Boy, but he also did Eagle versus Shark.
Oh, yes, I've seen that.
And
with
the
Jemaine,
one I mentioned, yeah, exactly.
Flight of the Conchords.
The one I mentioned earlier, too, he did called Hunt for the Wilder People.
Gotcha.
Which is amazing. Sam Neill is in it, and it's just a super great movie about a kid who gets adopted.
Sam Neill. Man, how great is Jurassic Park?
So great.
What I think
so
of Sam
amazing.
Neill, I'm like, man, Jurassic Park is such a rad movie. And we were talking earlier, too, about the effects, like visually. They still hold up to this day.
Absolutely, they still hold up. It's that practical with a little bit of CGI. It's just got a great combo there.
Yeah, exactly. Let me ask you this, too, because you said you like David Lynch. Would Frank from Blue Velvet have any kind of maybe inspirado on the character of Iron Lung?
That's awesome that you asked me that because, okay, so initially, before we hit up Kane Hodder, I hit up the guy who does the lead character design for Metalocalypse. His name's Songu Kwan. He lives in Ohio. He's the nicest dude in the world. I hit him up and I said, hey, we wrote this script. We're trying to get Kane Hodder involved. We'd like to pay you to design our main killer, the bad guy. And to connect this to the question you were asking, he was like, great, this sounds awesome. I read the script. I really like it. Just send me some pictures of what you imagine this character to be like and to look like. And first image I sent him was a picture of Frank from Blue Velvet with the air mask on his face. Yep.
Dennis Hopper. That is literally one of the best villains ever put on video. The scummiest, craziest.
If you aren't uncomfortable during any of his scenes, you're a sociopath and I don't want to hang out with you.
Exactly. One of the worst, as far as having a really good, hateable bad guy, I mean, that guy was crazy. He was on the edge.
Scary.
Making you feel dirty and gross all the time. Frank from Blue Velvet. What a scumbag. Dennis Hopper, what a great actor.
Absolutely.
You nailed it.
Great actor.
Not only did you nail it in that, you nailed it in Speed.
Right. Absolutely.
Keanu Reeves.
And Texas Chainsaw Massacre, too.
Yeah, that's true.
Boom. Double chainsaws.
Double chainsaws. So, guys, we've been, tiptoeing around, talking about our favorite stuff. I don't know why I said tiptoeing around. We've been hanging out, chatting, drinking some
tiptoeing, I tiptoed to turn the fan on higher.
I know, that's true. You did. I saw you around trying to be so quiet. You're like, I'm going to quietly open the fridge. I'm going to quietly turn the fan up higher.
Guys, here's the water.
Yeah, here's a paper towel. It's warm in here. Dab your forehead.
Andy, the producer, never stops moving.
That's true. He never stops producing, guys. That's just the way it is. So tell everybody here. As we are winding down, where can people keep up with Iron Lung and the process online? Do you have any social places where people can check it out as it progresses?
We've been very careful about how much information that we let out about the film, just until we know exactly what our continued timeline is going to be. We do have socials set up for Iron Lung all across the board. We've got Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. We haven't done anything to promote those just because we've got as mentioned, a whole marketing plan that ties in with how all this is going to launch. So we've naturally just been letting people, if they were to find us, you know, we're on IMDb where people can look us up that way. The actual production company itself, Boland and I just formed. It's called Two Birds Productions. We formed it here in Kentucky for the benefit of filming a great movie here in a great state, taking advantage of everything that all the resources that we have here. So Two Birds, they can find us on all the socials, but they're going to have to find us. They're going to have to dig.
Well, we're going to start a marketing campaign as soon as we start our crowdfunding campaign, which, you know, hopefully is in the next month or two here. And from there, you'll definitely be able to track the movie and track us. And there's also going to be kind of a, I guess, surprise or underground marketing thing we're doing that you'll have to look out for.
Absolutely. Well, I'll keep everybody posted as it unfurls. We we'll be texting back and forth, I'm sure. You can let me know all the good stuff, and I'll let the listeners know. Throw it in the intros of the podcast coming out. So, listeners, stay tuned for that. I'm stoked on this movie. I'm so just stoked that, one, Josh, that, you know, I got to come here and do this today, and that you have this project. And Bolin, it's been great hanging out with you all day here.
Absolutely, Sean.
And I'm just can't wait to see the fruits of the labor, because I know you guys have been working super, super hard on it, and a lot of time, a lot of effort's gone into it, and I can't wait to see what becomes of it.
Well, we appreciate your time, man. Thanks for coming down and talking to us about everything. We're very appreciative of that.
No problem. And
yeah, thank you.
Let me end with this. Let me ask you guys. I'm going to put you on the spot here, but for any of the listeners out there that have an idea, whether it's to make a movie or they want to have a project, or they have some sort of passion going on, what's some advice that you can give them to make that happen?
Kind of how I was talking before. The hardest battle that we're going to fight is our own self-doubt. You know, we battle in our minds what's right and what's wrong all the time. But if you just allow yourself to openly express any direction, anything that you're trying to do, whatever you're trying to accomplish, in my personal experience, I found that things naturally come the way that they're supposed to. How that's supposed to be, you don't know. But just keep your eyes open, be receptive, acknowledge a good handshake, you know, do things that you know that's right. You're not necessarily going to know what that is, but when that time comes, you will. Just keep your eyes open, stay focused, and overcome that self-doubt. That's the biggest thing that I could say.
And I would add, shoot a film and write as much as possible. If you can get out every weekend, do that. That's going to lead you somewhere. And the minute you get anywhere, you're going to have all of that skill set behind you that you from the time you put in.
Yeah, basically, kind of to combine that, you know, success is when preparation, as you said, Bolin, meets opportunity. What you said, and that's where success happens, guys. So yeah, put that in your freaking pipe and smoke it, listeners. We are giving you these pro tips here. But yeah, guys, thank you so much for having me out to Handyland, having me out here on the compound and checking it out and showing me all the sights and taking me to Family Billiards for a delicious lunch.
Hey, you got it right.
Got it right that time. So shout out to Family Billiards again. And yeah, guys, this has been the Sean vs. Wild podcast. If you like what you heard, please like, share, and subscribe, and give me a 5-star review. So I know Josh gave me a 5-star review the other day.
I'm going to give you another.
I'll convince Bolin to give me another.
Oh, I'll give you a 5-star review.
Yeah, perfect. There you go, guys. And do the same. And yeah, if you want to check out more about what Josh and Bolin are up to, if you want to check out Iron Lung, I'll keep you posted on that. So I can't wait for it to come to fruition, guys. So thanks so much. And
you're a good man, brother.
Hey, you're a good man.
You're a good man. Thank you.
Hey, you're a good man. I appreciate that. Listeners, you're good men and women as well. So thanks so much for tuning in. This has been the Sean vs. Wild podcast.